This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This week, we're marking our 30th anniversary as a daily NPR program with a retrospective collecting interviews from our first couple of years. We'll start today's show with my 1988 interview with Paul Schrader, who wrote the screenplays for Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, and The Last Temptation of Christ, which were each directed by Martin Scorsese. Schrader wrote and directed Blue Collar, Hardcore, American Gigolo, and Light of Day. Sin, and sometimes redemption, are recurring themes in his work. He grew up in a religious Calvinist home. As a young man, he'd planned to become a minister. He didn't enter a movie theater until he was 17 because movies were banned by his church. He told me about that ban.
Well, it banned what they called worldly amusements, which included things like card playing and smoking and drinking and dancing and theater attendance. And this came out of Prohibition days. The ban was actually instituted in 1928. And, I once, as a child rather, impassionately queried my mother about this. I think I wanted to see some Disney film. And she said to me, "It doesn't matter. The quality of the film doesn't matter. It's the industry that is evil." And so I think that was the position.
Did you have a sense of what you were missing?
No, and I'm actually very happy about having missed all those.
No, really? Come on.
Well, yeah, because, really? Because you are imprinted as an artist or as a person by, how you come to a specific field. And I came to films as a college student, and the first films I really saw or paid serious attention to were films by Bergman or Buñuel, Antonioni, Bresson. And that was my original imprinting in films. And my peers and coevals, were imprinted with Westerns and Disney films. And when they say, "I want to make the movies that I loved when I was a child," they think about those films. And when I say that, I don't think about those films. I think about, the kind of childhood background and about the films I first came to love. I came to films as an adult and then later learned to love them as a child. So it has given me a unique perspective and a unique place in this business. And I've never really worried about anyone doing what I'm doing because no one has my perspective.
What's the first film you saw and what effect did it have on you?
Well, actually, the first film was a Disney film. It was Absent-Minded Professor. And I snuck...
Is that the one with Jerry Lewis or is that The Nutty Professor?
That's The Nutty Professor. This is the one with Fred McMurray.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the one about Flubber.
Oh, boy.
I snuck into the balcony and I sat there watching this. And I was wondering what all this fuss was about. And then about a year later... friend of mine took me to see Wild in the Country with Elvis Presley and Tuesday Weld. And I sat there and I realized, aha, this is why they don't want me to go. Here's the problem.
And what effect did that have on you, seeing that?
Well, I had developed a mad crush on Tuesday Weld.
And did that make you feel bad?
No, it made me want to see more movies.
Yeah, so what made you so passionate about movies?
Well, it was a very luxurious forbidden fruit. I mean, not only could you be a rebel and do something that upset your elders, but you could also wear the mantle of respectability while you were doing it. It was like having your cake and eating it. It was a rare opportunity, to be a rebel without, having to do things like break into cars.
When you started to go to the movies, did you feel hopeless about catching up, that everybody had grown up with movies and you hadn't, and you had this whole wealth of movies to see before you could know them?
I came in as a film critic, and I went to UCLA Film School, and I remember my first year in Los Angeles, I kept a notebook, and I averaged, 22 films a week for that year. And this was before cassette, so I had I was jockeying from one little university cinema to the next. And that's all I did for about 2 years, was caught up.
You had intended, I think, to be a minister, and then you became a film critic, and then a screenwriter, and director. Why had you wanted to be a minister?
Well, it was just sort of part and parcel of the background. You know, those were the most respected figures, and I've always had this sort of proselytizing urge, you know, to go out and communicate and convert, and so that was rather natural.
Do you feel like you channeled that urge into movies?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious.
One of your movies, Hardcore, is about a father from a background similar to yours, a Calvinist in Grand Rapids, and this father's daughter runs away to the city where she starts working in pornographic movies. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if your parents felt like the father in this movie when you left home and started just working in regular movies, if the movies were so extreme to them in the first place that it might have been hardcore.
Yeah, well, I suspect they may well have.
Did they ever break the ban to see any of your movies?
I believe so, but it's not a subject that comes up.
Yeah. I was wondering if ordinary life or if the film world seemed exotic to you after leaving Grand Rapids. When I say ordinary life, I mean a more secular life.
You know, people came to Hollywood, who come to Hollywood, they talk about how tough it was. You know, before I moved to New York, I was in Los Angeles 14 years. And strangely enough, it never seemed that tough to me, because I had come from a background where people were not trying just to tell you how to behave. They were trying to tell you how to think. And you had to fight off the mind control aspect of it. I got to Hollywood, and I said, these people don't care how I think. They just want me to behave in a certain way. This is no problem. So I didn't see it as that difficult.
You've been collaborating with Martin Scorsese on and off since the mid-70s. The first time you collaborated was on the film Taxi Driver. You had written the screenplay, and you asked, I think, that he direct the movie. And I think you wanted him to direct it after seeing his film Mean Streets.
Right.
What was it about Mean Streets that you knew was the right sensibility for the film you were making, Taxi Driver?
Oh, it's just a passion, you know, and also the perversity, you know. Someone who is willing to grab the thing, put it between his teeth, bite hard and run, you know. I don't want to use words we can't use on language, but someone who has the guts to do it.
Now, in Taxi Driver, your screenplay is about a lonely, alienated, psychopathic taxi driver. You've described the taxi as the perfect metaphor for loneliness, a man driving around the city in a steel coffin. And his alienation erupts into a bloody killing spree at the end of the movie, which he thinks of in heroic terms. He thinks he's helping to clean the city of the pimps and the filth. I want to play from go ahead.
What's interesting about that is in the film, he fixates on two women, one of whom he can have and one of whom he can't. And, of course, he wants the one he can't and doesn't want the one he can. And out of this dilemma, he decides to kill the father figure of the good girl, who is a politician. And when he cannot do that, he fails, he kills the father figure of the bad girl, who's the prostitute. And what's interesting, in his mind, there's really not much difference. They're both, there's these competing father figures. It's just that in society's mind, of course, he becomes a hero because one of them was a pimp and not a politician.
Sounds a little Freudian. Were you in Freudian analysis at the time?
No, subsequently.
Okay. Well, you wrote the journal, the diary, for Travis Bickle, the taxi driver, which De Niro just gives a brilliant reading of in the movie. I want to play some of that, and this is from the record, so it's excerpts edited together from the film.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Robert De Niro over a score by Bernard Herrmann with the screenplay by my guest Paul Schrader from Taxi Driver.
May 10th. Thank God for the rain, which has helped wash away the garbage and the trash off the sidewalks. I'm working long hours now, 6 days a week, sometimes 7 days a week. It's a long hustle, but it keeps me real busy. I can take in $350 a week. Sometimes even more when I do it off the meter. All the animals come out at night. buggers, queens, fairies, dopers, junkies, sick, venal. Someday a real rain will come and wash all this scum off the streets. I go all over. I take people to the Bronx, Brooklyn. I take them to Harlem. I don't care. Don't make no difference to me. It does to some. Some won't even take spooks. Don't make no difference to me. Each night when I return the cab to the garage, I have to clean the back seat. Some nights I clean off the blood. 12 hours of work and I still can't sleep. Damn. Days go on and on. They don't end. All my life needed was a sense of some place to go. I don't believe that one should devote his life to morbid self-attention. I believe that someone should become a person like other people.
The tone of writing in that seems so perfect for the character.
I love that line. I do not believe that one should devote his life in more self-attention, which, of course, is what this character does.
Oh, precisely.
Every moment of the day.
And the next line is just the most perfect line about alienation I think I've ever heard. I believe that somebody should become a person like other people. It's just the perfect expression of alienation. How did you know, not being a psychopath yourself, how did you know the tone of voice to get for this? It just seems just right.
Well, I wrote that script in 10 days, in two drafts. It jumped out of my head like an animal. And so it was a really cri de coeur. It was a cry from my heart. I've fallen into a difficult period in Los Angeles where I was living in my car and just sort of driving around. And having a lot of trouble sleeping. And finally I got a pain in my stomach, which turned out to be an ulcer. And I went in the hospital. And then while I was talking to a nurse in emergency, I realized I hadn't spoken to anyone in several weeks. And when I was in the hospital, I realized that that's what I was. I was like a taxi driver. I was like this person who was floating around in this car. And I got out of the hospital, and I wrote that script, like I said, in 10 days.
Did being in that car, driving around in it, almost living in it, increase your sense of detachment and alienation, being separate from?
Yes, I mean, particularly in Los Angeles, where I was. I wasn't in New York at the time. You know, you really, you know, you do feel, like you are alive in a coffin.
Let's get back to the tone that you actually wrote it in. There's something almost Old Testament about the tone. Someday a real rain will come along and wash all the scum off the streets, but that's that apocalyptic sense.
Yeah, I really, you know, that was my first real script. I'd done one thing before, and I didn't know how you were supposed to write scripts yet.
But had you studied the journals of people who had become assassins or murderers?
No, I was actually surprised. Yeah, Arthur Bremer's journal came out after I had written the script. And I read it, and I was very surprised to find that the voice was almost identical. And I think that, you know, the reason that people, psychopathic people, have attached themselves to this film is because the voice is absolutely authentic.
Did it scare you that you were able to so authentically and so intuitively capture a psychopathic voice?
Well, you know, it scared me that I was at that place at that time. I mean, the person who wrote that script is long gone, and I don't even know if I would recognize him if I saw him.
I read that De Niro had you record the diary that you wrote. Do you still know all the lines by heart?
No. In fact, I never go back and see any of the films. You know, I saw Patty Hearst when I handed it in April, and I'll never see it again.
Well, why not?
I don't like to go back.
Listen, I've seen Taxi Driver lots of times.
I don't like to go. All I see is the bad. I never see the good. I just like to, you know, keep moving.
You had mentioned that you think one of the reasons why psychopaths attach themselves to Taxi drivers because the voice is so authentic. What was your reaction when Hinckley said that He had seen Taxi Driver, and he wanted to impress Jodie Foster by attempting to assassinate the president.
I was in New Orleans at the time, scouting locations, and they came over the radio that this kid had tried to kill Reagan. And he was from Colorado, sort of a white bread kid. And I said to the person sitting next to me, I said, it's one of those taxi driver kids. And I got back to the hotel, and the FBI was waiting for me. And in fact, it was one of those taxi driver kids. You know, the film didn't create them. They exist before the film and after the film. And they attach themselves to many things. It's just actually sort of rare that they attach themselves to a good film. More likely they attach themselves to things like advertising.
Mm-hmm. You know, you are always warned about the danger of films. Did any of that come back to you after this?
No, not
relevant.
I think art really works, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that it is possible through artifice to, vicariously purge yourself of these dangerous feelings.
Three of your films, Taxi Driver, Hardcore, and American Gigolo, are set in part in the sex trades. And I was wondering what your interest was in there.
A lot of adolescent acting out. I came from a rather puritanical background. And at a certain age, you've got to trash the candy store.
Is that what you saw yourself as doing?
Yeah.
When you started directing as well as writing, what was the most difficult thing for you to learn about directing?
Visual logic. Mm-hmm. I'd come from a background which believed that ideas were in the province of words. If you had something to say, you use words to say them. And it took me a long while to understand that images were also ideas, and that they were not synonymous with words, and that the image of a fork is not the same as the word fork. And it sounds rather simple, but I tell you, it took me a long time to figure it out.
Well, how did you learn how to think visually?
Well, I fell under the tutelage of a wonderful architect named Charles Eames, and that played a very important role in understanding that the poetry of and the logic of imagery.
You've also said that you had to learn how to not be too literary when you were writing screenplays. You said, I don't think a movie should have too many good lines, at most 5 great lines and 10 good ones. The rest should be absolutely ordinary and banal.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can overwrite a movie and start to call attention to the language, unless that is your intention, unless language is the subject matter of the film, such as in a David Mamet production. But if you are trying to, convey a quotidien, a daily reality, and then you've got to restrain yourself from getting a little excessive in that area.
You said that you are no longer the same person who wrote Taxi Driver, that you don't really have those feelings anymore. At that time, I think you were really motivated by certain demons, by alienation, by loneliness. You're now married, you're a father, and I figure loneliness wouldn't have the same pull on you that it did then. Are there different things that motivate you now in your writing, or even different demons that drive you?
Yes, certainly. And you miss those old demons, because those are powerful engines and they really drive you hard. It was actually easier to write then because you had no choice. You were just running to keep the demons from swallowing you up. So today it's a little more difficult. You have to use your imaginative powers and your creative skills to a greater degree.
Several of your films, like Patty and Hardcore, are in their way about leaving the family and about breaking away, either voluntarily or involuntarily, from what your life has been. When you left your home and when you broke away from the church, was that a wrenching experience for you?
No. I mean, it was more like the way a bullet must feel when it's finally discharged from a gun.
You want to explain that?
Well, I've been waiting a long time to get out of there, and I came out with a bang, and I took off and didn't look back.
Paul Schrader recorded in 1988.